Hi everyone, Deddy here. Before we start this episode, I just need to make a note that throughout this episode, I keep calling the scenario we're doing scenario 6. It's actually scenario 9. We are doing episode 6, scenario 9. But for some reason, I keep saying scenario 6.
The following episode may contain spoilers for the game Frosthaven.
Welcome to episode 6 of our board game podcast, A Master's Degree in Rolling Terribly, aka AmDirt, which lately we are definitely AmDirt. I'm your host, Eddie.
Okay.
And just like the scenario, I'm flying solo. No, Gazzy is here. I forgot. Say hi, Gaz.
Yeah, very funny. Hi, Gaz.
That'll make a lot more sense soon. So today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about going straight to scenario 6. From last week, we decided to go straight to another one. It comes up with that thing sometimes where it's like, do we bother going back to Frosthaven? And you raised that, like, do we bother going back just for, well, an event, a day passes, maybe a little bit of crafting, and all of that kind of stuff. And we made the decision to just press on unless a bulk of us, like, level up, right?
Yeah, I think I had a perk that I could have got. So, I mean, if someone else had raised even a slightly good reason to go back, I would have. But at that stage, it didn't seem to make sense to go. Mm.
So, yeah, straight to scenario 6, continuing the original quest line that we had begun earlier, which we've been doing this whole time. We've just had one little detour.
We had to go kill some crabs.
That's the detour.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That was like, we were like really focused on helping Frosthaven and all the people we've been meeting. And then we just were like, you know what, though? I really got to smash some crabs.
Yeah, that's crustacean smashing.
Yep. And then after one lot, we're like, all right, had enough. That's enough crabs. Let's just get back on track.
That's right.
So, yeah, apologies out there to any crab people.
Yeah. So we did a road event as well. We did this week's road event because when you go from a scenario to another one, we weren't too sure, but turns out we do another road event. We're going to talk a little bit about how scenario 6 went. We're going to run over just the standard things of battle goals and DPS meters from that particular scenario, which is always a fun discussion. We're going to talk about our thoughts, and then we're probably going to clean up with a little bit of the outpost phase, essentially.
Yeah. And I guess before we jump right into it, I wanted to say thank you to the people that have reached out and given us a little bit of feedback. It's great hearing what you're enjoying and what you want to hear more of. We've had people contact us through Reddit, in the Gloomhaven subreddit. And as we've mentioned, you can contact us and follow us on Instagram at m_dirt or on Twitter at u, that's the letter u, mdirt. And look, we're always keen to talk to people, hear their thoughts, and get feedback on what we're doing. Because, you know, as much as we love doing this, and it is really, really enjoyable not only playing Frosthaven, but talking about it and catching up, it's also cool to interact with the community. So, you know, hear what everyone else likes, what they want to do. And if we can slightly alter what we talk about and how we go about things to, you know, make it more entertaining for everyone out there, then we'll definitely give that a crack.
Mm. No, absolutely. And again, thanks for the feedback. You know, we'll keep doing what we're doing and, you know, making adjustments as we need to, as we go. I mean, we're still relatively new to this, so just doing what we really enjoy.
That's it. So I think to jump straight into it, we'll talk about the road event. So we didn't know we had to do a road event, but we did have to do one after we looked that up. So handy having the rules by our side. Mm. And I quite like this road event just purely from it was a decision, but it didn't seem like an arbitrary decision. So without going too far into it, we came across some berries and it asked us to basically pick a path, something we wanted to do with them. That wasn't eat them, right? It wasn't red or green berries, right? It wasn't, hey, you found red or green berries, is red good or red bad, like Gloomhaven was all about. What was cool about it, though, was we kind of worked out amongst us which one we wanted to go based on what we had. And again, I don't want to go too far into it because it, you know, again, we're trying to cover spoilers a little bit here and not give away these events because some people, regardless of how much they played, may not have come across it. But I kind of like that. We talked our way through it and we realized that, you know, there was a better path to take and it ended up being okay. I don't think the outcome was amazing, but it also wasn't terrible.
No, but it wasn't like catastrophic. It wasn't like changing, you know. Again, we probably don't want to go into specifics, but it wasn't something that's going to sit there and be like, ah, if only we didn't do that or anything like that. No, it was fine.
And I think where the real coin flip thing that we were talking about previously comes into play and where it gets frustrating is like, you know, oh, do you want to jump off the cliff or do you want to fight the bear? And you go, oh, hang on, like, okay, both of these could be the right thing to do, or they could be really bad. I don't know. And then you go, oh, I fight the bear. And it's like, oh, the bear kills you. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'll start with wounds. So that's the kind of stuff where you go, I don't know what we should do. This one was a bit different because it was like, hey, make a choice between these two things and then you'll get some outcomes. And once we finished it, we were like, oh, okay, I guess we kind of know how this one works now. So I don't know if it's a repeatable one, but if it is, we'll have an idea about going into it, or let's see what the other idea is, or do we want to go down the same path again?
I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure it came out.
That's it, done?
I think so.
We'll never see that one again. Excellent. Well, we can just forget what I just said then. That's completely useless, but it's handy information. What was the scenario about? Because I know we're on the path to... No. This is the side quest. Yeah. So where we're up to storyline wise is we're following the priest who we sided with, and she's told us to go somewhere for some reason. And we're really excited about that. On the way, we've gotten to a point where we actually need a craftable item to continue along. So we've got to go back to Gloomhaven and craft this thing. And a side kind of quest or a side path opened up after we had finished the last one.
Which is further down from the crypt, right? We were in the crypt and then it's like going further down into like catacombs or something like that.
Yeah. Well, the hole that we fell down and then fought the ice yetis that were undead and immobilized us from last week, we got out of that hole. But while we were in the hole, we found another hole. And the option was either if you've got this item, you can kind of go down this path and continue along with the priest quest, or alternatively you can go investigate the hole.
And then
naturally we got sidetracked because that's what you do, right, in any good RPG. So we got sidetracked and we explored the hole.
Well, we don't want to go all the way back to Frosthaven to craft something, so may as well go to something that's like right there. And we definitely went into a hole. So apparently, based on, because we play on Monday and we record on Fridays, so trying to remember everything as fresh as possible sometimes is a little bit of a test. But we did go into while setting up the room. It was a nice, large, squarish kind of room with the yay old question of, okay, Daddy, what are those? And I'm like, they're obstacles, followed by, are you sure? And yes, I'm sure. They've got a green border. They're obstacles. This room is full of obstacles. It's full of these long coffin-looking sarcophagus things. And traps, and a little altar in the middle that everyone was convinced was going to do something and was waiting for me to read the rules out for it.
Because you put it on a standee. it's like you randomly select certain terrain to put on a standee. Right. So it actually pops out, which it looks cool, and it makes me want all the terrain to be 3D. And then we were like, okay, so those are the monsters, those are the traps, those are the obstacles you've clarified. What's with this throne, shrine, cursed thing? And you're like, no, nothing, it's just there.
I think standees make everything look better.
Well, they do. They also confuse us, though.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Keep doing it.
No, definitely. So other than all of these, the standing altar and all of the obstacles that are in the room, we got greeted with something that I was really excited to, once I set it up, realize what they were. See Gaz, because of last episode, his favorite creatures in the whole game, I think, ice wraiths. They're back.
From a design perspective.
Right, sorry. not from a not from a damaging you kind of perspective. So we set up
From an interacting with my character perspective. I hate them.
So we set up a ice raids and two new ones. Living Dooms. They look like giant golem spiky guys. There were two of them, two elite ones in the middle near the altar, protecting that sacred altar. And yeah, that was kind of the first room that we were looking at, and we got to go through our cards, work out what we were going to do. Now, scenario, there were no penalties that I can remember, but the actual scenario goal was one of those confusing ones that we have encountered in the past that made no sense to us whatsoever. And it was literally disabling two switches in a room and then making sure everything was dead. So everything die and disable two switches that'll be somewhere. Not sure what they look like. And there's a slight rule area that was explaining that, you know, melee can be next to it and adjacent to it, and range just has to be within range of it and perform an attack, and that will deactivate the switch. So yeah, super confusing. But we've learned that, you know, goals can mean anything until we flip through those doors and get those little events giving up all that juicy flavor.
Yeah, and we spoke about that a few episodes ago. And I think, I mean, we are just learning to, if you don't understand what the objective is and nothing seems to be jumping out at you on the board, then just do the first part, which is kill the monsters. And I think that's what we ended up going, like, we don't see any switches. We just assume they're later. Let's just go, right? And if we get halfway into the scenario and realize, hey, what's that thing? Oh, that looks like a switch. Then we could probably go back and read it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, do we want to go into what happened in that first room?
Yeah, I do. So we had the setup. We had the, you know, every time. It's really funny in our group because once everyone asks where the players get set up, everyone kind of throws their miniature onto their desired space, and it's never at the front. So they kind of leave it to me to take that front spot. And
because you're the tank.
No, hang on. And I usually explain to everyone, oh, I'm probably gonna, you know, do my prep round. And then Gaz actually said, you know, oh, look, I'll take it. I'll take that front spot. So I sat in the back and did my thing. And in the end, Gaz got to start the very first round in front. What happened?
Oh, it was terrible. Like everything. I mean, if I really analyze what happened, I just tried to play too optimally. So I tried to look at everything that was going on, look at like the form I was starting in, what I was going to play that round, what I was going to play the next round. I was looking too far ahead and just got caught up in, like, I mean, they did, the monsters didn't really do anything exciting. They just moved up and attacked. I think they might have gone pretty quick. But it just went poorly, and I just got absolutely walloped. Yeah. Like, I got smashed.
Oh,
and
Gaz is playing a Gemini thing, for any new listeners, but...
The worst thing was about how the ordering was is something like... And maybe this was turn two, actually, where I really got pummeled, but I had played, like, a move with a shield, eat frost, because one of the monsters had created frost, so I thought, I'll get rid of that. I'll look at this, I can eat this and get an extra shield. Then I'm going to do some retaliate. So I was going to end up with, like, a shield two or three, retaliate three or four. Like, it was going to be a really good turn. But then they went before me. Like, one of them ate the ice, so there was no ice there. And then the other ones just turned around and punched me in the face. Mm. So I was burning cards in turn two for damage, and that was the trend of my entire scenario, which we won't give away too many spoilers, but I burned a lot of cards really quickly.
Well, Geminates normally burn a lot of cards, right?
Yeah, that's it. So I think the other error that I made, so basically this scenario, from my perspective, is a series of miscalculations and errors all the way until I exhaust. Mm. And even just to put the cherry on the top of errors, just before I exhausted, I made one last error. Like, it didn't have any impact on the outcome of the scenario, and I still made it and managed to make an additional error. So I can admit when I completely stuffed everything up. But the good thing is I actually managed to get one of my masteries.
Yeah, and that was, we allowed him to get his mastery when it was looking a bit south. Luckily, one of his masteries is to play a burn card every round or something like that, right?
Discard an ability card every turn.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, we helped him out with that. Yeah, he helped himself as well.
Yeah, but it just ended up being one of those games that I just looked at it and went, all right, well, this is interesting. Now, the miscalculation from a how quickly I was going to burn through my deck, for lack of a better term, was that this ended up being a really long scenario. And not so much there was lots of rooms and monsters, but there was a really long corridor, which basically meant that, well, with very few cards coming into it, there was no chance that I was making it down that corridor. So proceeded to fall over.
So we cleared the first room. Ice Roads did their swappy thing, and it was really cool. And we had these new living dooms. And was there anything remarkable that they were doing? Just hit hard.
Hitting really hard.
Yeah. And I took a turn or two to prep and jump in the position before I started attacking. Now, just to keep everyone happy, I did use Crushing Weight or whatever it is, the plus two. I went back to the old plus two on my Drifter. I'm a Drifter, by the way. So I put on the
plus
two.
Turns out having plus two damage every time you attack is pretty good, isn't it?
It's not bad. Look, it isn't bad. I don't like the idea that I'm still very stubborn on this. I don't like the idea that there's only one way to play a class, right? Otherwise, it's boring, right? I'll get so bored of doing the same thing all the time. You want to mix it up and keep it spicy, but at the start, when I realized, no, I need to actually do some damage right now because this is looking like a three-man scenario, I equipped that one. I equipped my level 2 cleave that does the 2 extra damage to an adjacent dude, and a shield. They were the 3 persistent ones that I decided to strap on. I didn't go with the healing one this time because, well, Gaz already did most of the damage receiving, so I didn't really feel like I was in trouble at all. So out we went. We had Phil on the Deathwalker doing his normal stuff with all his shadows, and Calvin with his Army of the Dead on his Bone Shaper. So we were actually doing, other than the absolute chaos that Gaz took at the very beginning of this room, it actually turned out to be quite okay. We ended up cleaning up the room quite nicely, and this is where I'm going to spoil my battle goal. Because I chose a battle goal that said I can never exit a room that has loot tokens still in it. And I have learnt that flying units can fly over obstacles. I knew that already. But if they die or get killed on top of an obstacle, I believe, I couldn't get a definitive answer, but I believe they drop it on the obstacle. And the only way to loot those is to use a loot 1, loot 2 card. Right, you can't actually end your turn on an obstacle. So I was screwed. And right from the beginning, I was running through the rule book and I was jumping online and flying creature and loot token. And I was like, I can't do this. I'm already booked on the first round. It's worth 2 ticks. I'm so far behind on ticks. I wanted to catch up. And right from the get-go, my battle goal was just not going to happen because I'm not going to sit back and try to get everyone to use their loot 1 cards to try and get these tokens. It wasn't just one either. There was like 3 flying units that dropped their loot tokens onto obstacles. And I was like, this is just hilarious. So anyway, I didn't do my battle goal. So that's a thing for the end. So we ended up going into the second room. And Gaz is right. This is where we got into Corridor Land.
Just before that, one thing that was cool with the Ice Wraiths, is that what they're called? Mm-hmm. Was we talked about this last week because you had a sneaky peek at some of the cards in their deck.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about their really cool switcheroo ability where they turn from elites to normals and normals to elites. And you alluded to another really cool card that they have that I was going to hate. And they pulled that up, which was Go Invisible.
Yeah.
And everyone loves invisible creatures, especially when you try to play retaliate and really get them to hit you so that they can do lots of damage themselves and don't do that. So yeah, that was cool. So that was another thing. Now we know, understand more about these ice wraiths and how tricky they can be.
Yeah, I told you.
And one other thing that I remember happened in that room that Calvin actually learned on his Bone Shaper from the last one is that he has a persistent card that stops his summons from taking retaliate damage.
Mm.
So we talked about this last week that they were just absolutely booking him, right? Like, you know, the skeletons or the wraith especially. And that walk up and attack for one and take two damage back on these, you know, range retaliate mobs. It was just terrible. So he was actually able to overcome that and kind of push through these monsters that had retaliate, which was really
I remember good. When he pulled that card down and he read it out loud and we were all like, oh, his hands went up in the air. It was like, it's just a simple card and we were so excited for it.
Yeah. And again, that's a cool thing to be able to tech for, right? Because he didn't have that in his deck. So I think it must be an X card or a level one card. He hadn't chosen it, but he did find it when we were playing last week. He was like, oh, I can do this. So I guess he's just going to have to make that call at the start of a scenario. Like, are these monsters that we know have retaliate, you know, especially innate retaliate? If so, then it's probably going to have to be one that he picks up, but he doesn't have to take it all the time. So that's cool, being able to have that kind of toolkit.
Yeah. So we joined two long corridors together when I was setting it up. Because the exciting thing of when you open the door is it a small one? Is it a little corridor? Is it whatever? And we had two really long sort of bendy corridors that were linking up it to one super long corridor. And it was like, holy crap. Along the way, I set up two more elite ice wraiths. So we had more of those, which was awesome. And some old familiar faces, living spirits from Gloomhaven. And these, from memory, I mean, I know now, but from memory, they were the high shield, low health, undead, spirity dudes that I think do cursing stuff and all of that. And then, right at the very end of this monstrous double corridor, was one single ooze. And the second I put that down, Gaz knew what it was, I knew what it was, and it was like, oh, how clever. Right at the end, all the time in the world for this thing to just run around and multiply and multiply and multiply. So yeah,
it was pretty cool. It was a interesting aha, I see what you did there moment. And it made it really tense. It was a really cool way to put a timer on that kind of component of the dungeon, of the scenario. Because, I mean, we didn't rush, but once we did kind of figure out that we had the ice wraiths and the living spirits kind of under control, like, I think there was a couple of points where we're like, oh, is that under control? And then I think maybe you and Phil jumped ahead because I think they split twice in the end, but they didn't do anything for like the first couple of turns. But then once they split, we're like, oh, this is going to get bad.
It's happening.
So yeah, it was it kind of became this bit of a race, which is cool. Like it's a cool way of putting a timer or a race on it without saying, okay, well, you've got six turns, and if you don't get here, you die, right? You know, it's more of a, well, take your time if you want. Did you want to fight 12 oozes? Then, you know, take as long as you want. So that was a cool thing.
Yeah, ooze design. I'm so glad they kept it, to be honest. In a way, it's such a tilting mob. With that multiplier, especially when you have a bunch of them. They also have shield, they poison, and they can just swarm you. And I'm so glad for now, in this particular scenario, that I got to see them again.
Yeah. From a design perspective, one of the things, and all how it feels, and it's amazing how in Gloomhaven they did this, and obviously the ooze is carried across, but are starting to see it with some of the other mobs, is how some of their ability cards work so well with each other. It's almost like it's scripted. Yeah, you know, because I think we ended up in one of the rooms where there was oozes, and they split, so they had more of them. And then the next one, they drew their attack through poison ability, right? Which is literally the worst card that they can pick when they're attacking multiple targets, poisoning, and so basically just all shooting everywhere. And you go, oh great, cool, there's six oozes and they're all attacking twice, you know, a low attack, but everyone's poisoned now. So those kind of combinations, they suck. Like, when they happen, you're like, oh, this is going to be really rough. But when you reflect on it, it's really cool that the monsters can have so much synergy with themselves. You know, and when that moment comes up, you're almost like, I hate you, monster deck. Like, I really hate you. But, you know,
the groans. It's kind of still just cool. When that card comes up and you get familiar with that deck, and when you know that there's that one card that's going to screw you, or you even talk about it. It happened at the end of this. I'll get to it a little bit later, but when things were getting really hairy. So, yeah, that second room, that corridor, okay? We had the two living spirits that I was looking at going in there and laying in some pierce damage along with Phil. And by this stage, I think Gaz was down to about 1.5 cards as he was just making his way down this corridor, kind of hopping along. And then Calvin was there with all his summons. Oh, actually, I do recall at the beginning of this round, you muddled everyone, including us, all of us.
Oh, it was so good. So for those that don't remember, last week, Daddy put the challenge down for me. He laid the gauntlet. He put me in a position to put my integrity and pride versus what he said I wouldn't do, and that was to stack status effects on him. So I believe...
He poisoned me.
Early on, I managed to poison him. Yep, that was a good one. Yep. And then there was a turn where at this stage, I was at the point where I'm like, I am so far gone. I just basically need to burn a card every turn and get my mastery because otherwise I'm still. Yeah, it was at that point. And we hadn't seen the super long corridor yet. So it was kind of like the other scenarios we have done. And this is where I made the miscalculation. They've all been 2 or 3 rooms, not like one room, a giant long corridor, and then another room. Like none of them have been super like long, make sure you don't burn any cards. And I mean, this just happened to be the worst one I possibly could have chosen. And I actually think I said that last week when we were talking about masteries. I said, I'll just pick one and I'll die halfway through and then you guys can carry me through. So thanks for doing that. But yeah, I had a really good opportunity to jump in and muddle 3 targets. And I said, Daddy, I'm going to muddle you, but you're long resting, so I'll go before you, I'll muddle you, and your muddle will be gone by the time you have your next turn.
Mm-hmm. I was fine with it.
Unfortunately, every while, I mean, it was going to have no impact, right? Like, it was going to be like, I get to fulfill my goal of trying to put more status effects on you. It doesn't actually impact your turn. Unfortunately,
Calvin... No one else got the memo.
And no one else got the don't go in there within this period of time or you're going to get muddled. And they all moved into a clump... So that I ended up muddling Deddy, Calvin, Calvin Summon, and Phil.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel like that was a pretty good effort. There should have been a mastery for muddle 4 of your friends.
Basically, yeah, Gaz was, not only was he being really, really useless for the scenario, he made it even worse by muddling us. Like, he was just going against us, basically.
No, I'm gonna rebut that and say... I wasn't useless for the scenario. Most of the turns I had were good. The problem was that I just went through my deck way too quickly so that I wasn't able to have help with like the second half of the scenario.
Yeah.
Because if you had ended the DPS meter and all the stats at the after that room, right? Like I had taken all the damage.
I guess. I mean, we can all unload in the first 15 seconds and blow through our rotation. Or we can save it.
Can we?
Yeah, apparently. What do you mean?
Well, I'm going to challenge you to do that now. Okay?
That's not a thing. It can't happen. That's not how this works. So it was around this time where Gaz muddled everyone. Then he made the decision to have a long rest, which we didn't think much of. And then he died. Well, he exhausted.
Yeah. Well, I had one more turn. So this is my last thing that I stuffed up before I died, was that my battle goal was whatever the one's called that says don't long rest. So I hadn't long rested. And then for some dumb reason, when I was looking at my cards, I'm like, okay, if I long rest here, then it means I'll get another turn and I can use these 2 cards and I can do something next turn to kind of help clear these spirits. Which I didn't need to do because everyone had it under control. I just think I just got baited into Deddy constantly being like, oh, you're not doing anything. Oh, stop not doing anything. Like, you're useless. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I better mix my cards up here so I can actually do something. I didn't end up doing anything because everything was dead by the time I finished long resting. Mm. And I was like, okay, well, I chose a heal. And everyone's like, nah, full health. So I'm like, awesome. So I think I burnt one more card for me, which was to heal myself back up, and then just stood there and died. It just fell over, right? Like it was a very climactical exhaustion.
Oh, it was great. I took photos of it and put it straight on the Instagram. It was amazing. It's like you got this long map and Gaz is dead in the first couple of tiles and on the second tile. And it was just great. He's just lying down.
I was, I was just so tired. I was so tired of the last four scenarios and carrying everyone on my back that I was just like, I just can't do this one. So
yeah, something like that.
You know, I believe in you, and then I sent you on your way.
And away we went. We made the plan. Phil and I looked at each other and we nodded. And actually, it was around this time I was like, well, Gaz is out, right? He's dead. And we had the discussion, do we remake this? We have enough time to probably get through the scenario if we remake it now. If we hold on, it's probably going to be too late and we'll be looking at a failed scenario with a potential redo next week. And it was kind of, yeah, it was that with that bit of a crossroads. And I looked at my cards. I hadn't discarded anything yet. Nothing's gone in the lost pile yet. I was just having my first rest just then. And Phil was the same. And we looked at each other and it was like, hey, we've got enough cards here. I kind of want to see this out, at least see what's in that last room. Just doesn't feel right ending it now just because our Gemini made a bunch of stupid decisions.
Hang on. Let's just ease up a little bit, right?
Sorry. It was just so satisfying.
Yeah. Well, look, it was. And we did talk about that. And just to be clear for people not sure how and when we play in the evening and a weeknight. So we tend to only really have enough time for one scenario. And it gets to that point where we go, all right, this, if we stopped, we'll have enough time to actually go through and complete it again. If we don't, we're probably going to have to end on a loss and come back to this next week, which just kind of feels bad. Mm. So what I found really interesting, though, was that point where both you and Phil and even Calvin were like, yeah, no, we've got heaps of cards. And then like two or three turns later, we're like, oh no, we're in trouble. We've got no cards left. And I was like, hang on. We were just had a conversation where you guys were flushed with cards and then somehow they all went away.
I have absolutely no, I was still okay. I think Phil went and spent a bunch of his stuff because we went to the end of the hot corridor. Phil raced his way there and took care of the oozes, which by now had multiplied to like four. And there were still two more spirits in the hallway we had to deal with. So Phil may have burned a couple just doing that. Calvin also spent a bunch of cards and ate some grass, which I've never seen him do, and just ordered one of his skeletons to go full Sonic up the hallway. And this thing, I'm making my way up there slowly, and this thing just zooms right past me and joins Phil at the front. And I'm like, what the hell was that? It was amazing. I haven't seen him do that. Apparently he needs grass for that. Then we fought off the oozes and the spirits, and we were getting ready to look into that last room. Now, card supply-wise, everyone was getting a bit low and we were talking about it. Calvin himself was still way down the back, but his summons were...
Calvin was still like near where I died.
Yeah.
Like he's just like slowly walking up, pumping cards into his summons to try and get them up
there. Yeah, and Phil and I were near the door, ish. And look, I made the decision, I need to open this so I can at least see what we're dealing with. And luckily we only planted a nice small-ish tile, which we got to then see the switches, which are placed in the back corners, of course, of the rooms. And in that room, I believe there were two oozes. Yeah, I think it was just started off with two. And what essentially was happening was the every turn that went past that the switches weren't deactivated, a new ooze would spawn from each one. And at our player count, they were going to be elite, which there was no way in hell I was going to be able to adjust it on the turn that I had opened the door. So we were already going to have a room of four oozes, which have the shields and all of that, and obviously the potential to multiply. I can attack like one thing maybe, and I had to make the decision how are we going to deal with these switches. So we had a bit of a powwow, just me, Calvin, and Phil, and tried to work out exactly, you know, how we were going to deal with this. Calvin flat up just said he was so far away he was trying to speed up to get in there, but luckily now that we'd opened the door his summons could go in. Phil said that he could take care of one of the switches by I think kicking a shadow in there and blinking to it and dealing with the switch, and I was gonna blow a movement and the what's it called, the drifter has a four range poison which I was gonna use just to reach it and attack it so that we could deal with the rest of the room. So that's essentially what happened. We managed to deal with both switches, leaving four of these oozes. And in the room was me. I think Phil by this stage had exhausted next to me. After he did take a bit of tanking and do a little bit of damage in there to help split it up with me. And Calvin had one summon that was making its way in to help me out. And this is where I knew that there was a card that the multiplying card wasn't going to bother me. Because every time they multiply, they take 2 damage and we were kind of whittling them down. The one that was going to bother me was the one that I think they do elites do 1 or 2 damage and they poison and they target 2. That was messed up because that first one poisons me and then the rest start hitting me for way more. And it was very rough. I think I ended up getting down to about 3 health or something along those lines.
Yeah, it was pretty bad because the turn after we revealed they split and then the turn after that they shot. Mm. So even though we killed a couple, well, I think we killed one and got one really low or killed 2, we ended up with, I think, 4 even after we killed a couple. So 4 elite oozes that were all drawing this card meant that there was going to be a fair bit of damage coming out.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was really, really rough. I stayed alive just, but we were trying to work out how to deal with this. Now, I think Phil may have used one of his last cards to kill one of the oozes to make things a little bit easier. And Calvin had brought one of his skeletons in there, which unfortunately became one of the targets for the oozes, the 2 target things, and they killed it off.
Yeah, that was a really like, oh no moment. Because it not only the summon was already poisoned and the ooze drew a +1. So it was like the worst combination that to make it die. Because really it was his big summon. I think it's his corpse thing, not his skeleton. And having that one in there with you would have just, even one hit from it, would have just been that extra little bit of damage to make us feel like it was going to be doable.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stress how stressed I was in this situation because Calvin literally, I won't say that, but it was basically me and Calvin wasn't in the room and the only way he could really help me was one of his summons, which had now died. So it was up to me. Now, I was halfway through my modified deck as well without pulling the null or the crit. So all of this tension was building up. Now, we talked about my Amdurt last week, or just Amdurts in general. I think Gaz is one. And Gaz even mentioned it's going to come to a point where it's not a funny situation. It's not a funny, you know, you flip your card and you miss, like they have been so far. This was so stressful that we were just dreading that as a potential outcome. So every time...
You got to understand my stress as well, right? So I've been watching now for about an hour because I fell over. Pumped all of my resources into getting this mastery to the only thing I was going to salvage out of it. And so now I had to rely on the Drifter of all of the classes. The Drifter, the one that doesn't really do anything well, to pull off like this miraculous victory. And there we were. It had happened 2 scenarios in a row that Deddy had pulled his null during a big attack. And now there was actually pressure. It was a clutch moment now. And we were just looking at it going, that next card is 100% your miss. Mm. Like, it can't not be your miss. Mm-hmm. That has to be. This is how this game works. It's 11 o'clock at night. We need to wrap up soon. We don't have time to restart. We're going to lose because you're going to draw your null.
So here's the play and the setup. There were 2 oozes left. One was low-ish. The other one had a fair chunk of health. I was playing a normal attack and going to deal with it. And out of nowhere, with his last breath, Calvin plays a card that none of us had seen yet. And it was a lost card. And it was allow a character to do an attack 5. And this was huge because we didn't even know it was there. We didn't even know he had it. So he cast it on me and I beat down the higher health one. Still very tense, still flipping that card and holding my breath. And we killed it. Then we had one more left. Now, one of the Drifter cards is the top action has 2 attacks. And I chose to play that. I still had it. And it's a burn card. And this was the last ooze in the game, which meant that I was guaranteed to kill it. Because even if I missed, it had 1 health, but it was going to hit twice and it was going to wound it. So at that moment when I played that, I knew we had won. But holy crap, just unbelievably tense. And knowing that we got all the way to the end, this was not one that we wanted to redo. Not at all.
This one would have been annoying to redo because most of them would be, right? Like most of the scenarios you don't really want to have to repeat. But it didn't have any really cool, that was a fun moment. It was kind of just a series of kind of hurdles and obstacles.
Yeah, mini puzzles.
And to know Yeah, and to know that we'd have to get to the end and then kind of kill these ooze, turn these switches off, which, again, once you know that room, it would be a lot easier to plan because you move up to the door, jump in, and have attacks to turn them off that turn. So it would have been heaps easier the next time, but it almost just would have been procedural. Mm. I don't feel like it would have been much of a challenge so much as just like, oh, let's just go through this. We know how to do this one. Just make sure you save all your movement cards.
Mm. Oh, God. So, yeah, we finished it up. We got the ending. We got our rewards. And we breathed a massive sigh of relief. And we were sitting there, patting each other on the back and talking about it. I've been writing notes, knowing that we were going to be making a recording. I wrote a lot of little paragraphs about Gaz, and there was mostly things like Gaz tanking, Gaz dead, Gaz dying, like just a whole bunch of this sort of stuff. And it was great. I think it was a great card economy for those who aren't named Gaz. I couldn't wait because, like, no, hang on. I couldn't wait because Gaz has been giving me so much grief, and I got to be the hero. I got to be the hero. Last man standing. Everything was riding on me. Now, everyone helped, obviously, but I was the one that was still alive, right? Right at the end. And it felt so good. So good. And knowing that Gaz was still dead in the second corridor. Amazing.
And you know what? I'm an enabler. What I do is I bring people into the game, right? And so I knew that you'd been having a rough time of it the last few scenarios, not really finding your niche. You didn't really, couldn't really shine in that spotlight. So sometimes you have to take a step aside and let someone else have the spotlight.
No.
And I'm really glad that you were able to shine and pull that out. You know, not drop your bundle in that clutch moment.
Mate, you owe me a mastery, and I'm going to choose the really, like, I don't know, the hard one, the persistent one. I'm going to get all my persistent tokens on that last spot of four of the actual cards, and then I'm just going to exhaust with all of them there. Wait, does that count? Do I lose all those cards? I probably do. I probably can't exhaust.
No, you can't. So I just want to point out that I pretty much called this. If you go back and listen to the end of last week's, not only did I say I was going to throw heaps of status effects on you, but I also said that I was going to exhaust halfway through the scenario and let you guys carry it. So I'm not sure what you're surprised about. Oh,
wait, did you say you were going to throw the scenario?
I didn't say throw the scenario. Okay. I said I was going to exhaust.
Because you almost threw the scenario. You realize that.
I did not almost throw the scenario.
You definitely almost did. Right?
Well, hang on. Hang on. You were at the end.
We had to work twice as hard because we missed out on your cards. Not to mention, you are the AOE. Not many of us have much.
I know. I carry the team. That's what I was trying to tell you earlier. I carry the team, and therefore I had to take a step back.
Gareth. So, yeah. The switches was really cool. I didn't mind that. I think they were also, I hope we placed them right. They were meant to be on the outskirts of the hexes in the corner, which kind of put them slightly more inconveniently out of reach. So that is as an endgame condition with the stress of the oozes. I really liked that. That was really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think overall the scenario was fun. It wasn't too complex from a, like, how much maneuvering do we need to do in order to figure this out? You know, once we opened up the ooze room, it really was mad rush to turn those switches off. So it was a cool little surprise at the end. And I can definitely see some people getting frustrated with that scenario. If you just were slightly short, like we were pretty close, or even just, you know, walking into that room and say getting a split first up and suddenly having six oozes.
Oozes like seem that, very that, RNG that way, in a way. You can get completely screwed by them. If the cards come out that way, because otherwise they could be just doing their little healing looting card, right? Several times in a row.
Well, that's what's hilarious about oozes is they can sit there for three turns and not do anything, right? Or sometimes then in three turns later, there's three times as many.
Mm.
So, yeah, it is a cool enemy to have in there. And I agree. I'm also glad that they put them in because I guess it's not to talk about balance or whatnot, but where it helps is they do take two damage. So it's not like some of the summoner mobs in Gloomhaven that would say, you know, summon living bones. Like I remember doing scenarios where they get that two or three times in a row and you're like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some of these elite bones and you're like, that have retaliate or target. And it's just like, this is crazy. Like, we have to burn through. And in Gloomhaven, they didn't drop loot either. So
yeah,
that was another thing. Like, not that it's much of a change, but at least killing all these extra mobs that come out of the summon, you know, they drop loot until you finish the loot debt. So what about battle goals?
So we already know about ours.
Yeah, so you failed yours because there was so much loot everywhere. And I failed mine because I'm an idiot. Right, that's literally it. This is like, there is no other, there it was 100% doable, and I'd already put myself in a hole. I should have just continued down that hole, but I didn't. I took a breath, and that's what caused me to lose a tick. So that's fine. I own that.
Yeah, I think Phil had to kill two enemies in one turn. And when he bolted to the end of the corridor for the oozes, the first one that had multiplied several times, he did that. In that particular round, he was very proud of announcing it.
Yeah, it was again one of those battle goal moments where he says, like, killed one and then he killed the other one, and he just said,
yeah.
And I've now killed two monsters in one turn. It's like, okay, Phil, thanks for letting us know. We were right here, we saw it. He's like, I'm just saying it again so that you remember I killed two monsters in one turn. And I think, yeah, again, that's where you kind of clued on a little bit.
Oh, finally, before we started recording, it was like, do you remember Phil's battle goal? We had to ask him, hey mate, what was your battle goal again?
Yeah, so we had no idea,
despite him telling us.
Yeah. And Calvin's one is tricky. I've had this one before. So Calvin's was kill one of every enemy type.
Oh yeah,
and he missed out on the big doom dudes right at start where there was only two of them and they didn't come back up.
Yeah,
and that's a tricky one, because I remember taking that, I think it was in the crab scenario, and you don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I think you can look and see what the monster types are. I think that's part of the scenario. I know at least in Gloomhaven, maybe this was just the digital version, but when you would go to a quest, it would tell you all the monster types, because sometimes you need to go to a scenario to hunt a specific monster, so it kind of needs to tell you.
Well, just like, you would know, but you wouldn't know how many of them there would be. So he knew that there was living dooms there, but he didn't know that there was going to be none more throughout the rest of the scenario.
That's true. And I suppose if you look at a scenario and see it's got an ooze in it, you're pretty confident you should be able to kill one of them. That's right, because by the end there should be 50. So yeah, so he didn't get that because he missed those two doom big doom guys at the start. So I think it just ended up being you and just Phil.
Yep, just Phil. It was not a good perky game.
No, I mean, I got my mastery.
That's so right. He did. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
DPS meters. Now, this is my favorite part. As you would hear from previous episodes, I love talking about this every single time, and I love to go into detail about all of it. So we had damage, right? Damage done. Now, I didn't track the meters this time. Phil did, because I apparently am terrible at doing it, and Phil is actually amazing at it. Very thorough.
Yeah, well, you complain. You complain every single time that there's some admin or, like, addition error. Like, oh, no.
I have too many things to think about. Drift is a very complicated class.
Yeah, okay.
So, Deathwalker, all right, he did 73 damage overall, and 19 of it, He's added how much of it was mitigated from shields and things like that, which is pretty cool. So 73.
Which for comparison, 73 is, he did like 50 odd last week, and we were saying that was kind of a new high. Mm. So he's actually managed to top that by 20, which is a decent effort.
Yep. So he did 73. He got 19 blocked for a total of 54 unmitigated damage, which is really, really good. Bone Shaper Calvin. Now he had 57. Unfortunately, 30 of it was mitigated.
He had such a rough time. Like, that opening room with the Doom Patrol and the Ice Wraiths, they all had shields.
So did the Spirits, and so did the Oozes.
Yeah, good point. But I just know there was so much damage in that room. He had two skeletons and a wraith just wailing on these, and we were just sitting there watching him draw the minus ones. And then when it would have two shields, he'd draw a plus one, but it only equaled. So Phil was writing all this damage down and just like zero, 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 two, zero. Yeah. So yeah, that was really rough.
Oh, so rough. But look, he came third. It's all right.
He did. Turns out when you just last the entire scenario, you do more damage.
All right. So Gaz did on his Gemini, he did 21. And 12 of it was blocked for effective damage of 9, which is pretty good. It's still good for where you died.
Yeah, one room, right? Like, I'm pretty sure didn't the last scenario, the entire scenario, you did 13 damage for the whole thing. No. And that was...
This isn't a have a go at me and me have a go at you thing. This is just me reading out numbers, that's all.
Yeah, I'm just comparing the last lot of numbers we had. So, yeah. No, look, I admit, again, this was not my finest scenario, but let's focus on next week. That's true. And my promise is that I will try to do better.
Yeah, as time goes by, this becomes less of a co-op game and more of a pushing numbers up and move out of my way kind of game. We'll see. So far, you know, we're doing really well with it. We haven't failed anything yet, and that'll pull our heads back in. Our Drifter pulled off 78 damage, and 13 of that was mitigated for a total of 65. That was really nice. Really nice. We like that. Just doing Drifter things. Now, on that note, I have accepted the fact that, yes, plus 2 damage is lovely, and having a bit of cleave is also lovely. I like it. I think... I was going to say I had to make this decision because we were one person down, but I made this decision before that person was anywhere near down. So, yeah, I think, look, I like it. I definitely like it. There are other ways to play a Drifter. All you people out there who, you know, are saying Drifter's easy and you need to do that and all that. No, there's many ways. This is a very effective way. And, yeah, I'll give it a go. I might try it more. Damage taken. All right. So, Deathwalker. Our Deathwalker took 8 damage, and he managed to mitigate 3 of it. So he took 5 effective damage. Me, on the Drifter, took 40 damage, managed to mitigate 21. So my 3 persistent abilities I managed to keep up over and over again, almost to the point where that shield almost fell off, and then it went all the way back up to the start, thanks to the plus 0 move a token back Drifter modifier cards, which was phenomenal. So, yeah, 19 effective damage received. Bone Shaper, 13 minus 7 for 6 damage. And our Geminate, 35 minus 8 for 27. And then just to round everything up with the healing, Deathwalker, I don't think... Oh, he has healed once. He does have a heal card somewhere in there. I don't think he brings it, and I don't think... when he does, I think it's the first card to get burnt. But he healed for 0. I healed for 8. Bone Shaper healed for 6. And Geminate healed for 4.
There we go. And that's where we landed on the numbers.
Yeah. Good numbers. All right. We decided to head back because I believe... Wait, did anyone else level up?
3 of the 4 people leveled up.
What?
I was 4 XP off leveling up, unfortunately.
No, I'm just trying to remember if I actually saw the level 3 cards or not, and then I did.
Yes, you did.
I sure
did. Yes, you did.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
It was like Christmas. Everyone was opening up their presents, and I was sitting there going like, oh.
You got to open up your mastery. I get
mine tomorrow.
That's true. So, Outpost Phase, take us away.
So, we got back. We bought some lumber. We bought some hide, because this is what we do now. Mm. We go out... and we loot coins and lumber. We don't loot hide, even though that's the thing that we want the most.
Yeah, this one didn't have any.
We barely loot any herbs, and we get metal because we don't really need it, so therefore it's everywhere. We got back. We did the outpost event, which was an interesting one. Again, I can kind of see where some of these outpost events are going to be going in regards to the storyline, which is pretty cool. And I think we're going to be starting the next scenario with a wound. I believe that was the outcome. So it wasn't bad in a sense, because I feel like we did the right thing.
Mm.
And so that was interesting. And we built some buildings. I think now we have all 3 of the factories.
Yes.
I believe we built the mine now. So when we return to Frosthaven, we can spend 2 gold to buy 1 lumber, 1 hide, and 1 metal. So that's kind of what we're using now to supplement our lack of hide. But
yeah,
we got that hide, and then we found five different ways we wanted to use it. So it's still be great if we could find some.
Yeah, we were like, can we put it towards a building? Well, if we're not going to put it towards a building, why don't we just put it towards something that Gaz wants to build? But then Calvin also wanted to build something. But then we may as well put it towards a building. But then we didn't have enough for the building.
Yeah, the
and then one of the items to take us to one of the scenarios was also an option.
Yeah, we need it for a scenario item. Two of us need it for crafting, and we also need it for a building. So I think that we ended up landing on the mine to generate some metal, because I assume that'll come into play, and that's where we landed. So we did get the couple of people, three people leveled up, so be interesting to see those new cards come into play. And I look forward to leveling up next scenario, and then us being on like a 10 long linked chain. It means I never get back to Frosthaven.
I was going to say, if one person can level up, do we go back to Frosthaven, or do we just keep pushing to multiple people?
I don't think so.
That's very honorable.
I don't think so. Because, well, we're getting really close. I believe that the next tick back, there's two things to read out in Frosthaven. So, like, I mean, yes, I feel like we do go back for someone leveling up, because it's like, that's a kind of like a fun thing to do. We've also just got to balance that up with we're probably going to come back and Frosthaven's on fire. So it'll be like, Frosthaven's on fire. You can't level up.
Yeah. Yeah. Your level up book is on fire.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. So that was the outpost phase. So I guess from this scenario, what did we learn? What did you learn, Daddy?
Drifter, when you play him the way I played him, which is almost, caveat here, I have not looked into, it looks very straightforward, right? The Drifter looks very straightforward. And I remember my first scenario on it, I forgot to equip a persistent ability, and I just went full default, move and attack, and everything was hitting me, and I'm like, ow, 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 and I got booked by those archers, right? So we've come a long way. I haven't looked up anything in any of the Drifter communities or any of the Frosthaven communities of how, you know, which card to get and which ones to upgrade when you level up and any of that, which perks to pick. I've gone in purely with my own brain power, which will explain why I'm a little slow on the uptake, right? I learned that when you prep it a certain way, it hits really, really hard. Like, and what's notable about that is it's consistently hard. I do like it, but at the same time, I still like having, like, the move 2 is such a good card as well in those really long ones. I didn't use it this time because I didn't know it, and by the time that long corridor came up, I was like, do I really want a fourth persistent card out? I don't know. But I have found that one to be super cool. The Retaliate 2 could have been really, really good against, like, swarms of oozes, right? Like, it's kind of tough. Like, the melee, the 2+ melee, and even the new card, the level 2 card, which I've been playing around with, and I do like it because it's like pure damage, right? It's adjacent cleave damage, which is great for shields and all that kind of stuff. I like where it's headed. I'm curious. Now, I've seen the level 3 cards now, and I haven't picked one yet. They look on par with how straightforward the Drifter is, which kind of disappointed me a little bit, especially after I see Gaz's Geminate cards. And I'm like, yeah, whoa, I can't wait to learn this card, you know, and work out how to use it. And mine was like, one of my cards is literally, oh, if you stand here, you can hit 2 things, and it's an attack 2. And I'm like, ah, oh, I mean, yeah, it's not a lost card, but it's not exciting. So I don't know. I think with the Drifter, honestly, you have to make your own fun. And I think that's one of the major strengths of it, is that you can make your own fun with it. You don't have to play the same thing all the time. You have a lot more flexibility than everyone else.
Yeah, and that's good, right? Like, at the end of the day, you've got to make sure that the class you're playing is fun, because you're going to be playing it for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you've always got the option of just creating a new character if you ever got to that point that you found that you weren't enjoying it. At least with the Drifter, you've got that flex. So it's not locked into a certain strategy, because you do have these multiple different cards you can play. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
I guess for me, what I learned, I mean, jokes aside, don't kill yourself in the first room.
Uh-huh.
From the last scenario, I kind of had an idea about the rhythm and the kind of attrition, the pace in which I needed to play at. I think what I got stuck into was that because I got rid of a couple of cards early because I needed to mitigate damage to not die, I kind of fell into a hole of saying like, nah, I'm all in. And I definitely feel like that's something I learned about, I mean, individual lose condition. We've talked about this before. Is that I kind of got sucked into that space where I probably didn't need to, because while there were a couple of cards that I burnt when I was moving around and attacking things, there was also probably a couple of cards that I burnt that I didn't need to, which could have given me more turns to kind of move up there and move along. So, yeah, I think I've learned a little bit about how to play the character a bit more and what not to do. So, but the scenario definitely got me when it was long and not two rooms.
Like, I'm going to just, now that we've sort of seen a little bit of what everyone can do, and you obviously have your own class, is there a character in our group that you would want to play the least?
Is there a character I would want to play the least?
Out of our group.
Well, that's a loaded question. You're basically asking us to vote, who's the worst
character?
No,
it's got nothing to do with that. It's a playstyle thing. It's about, yeah, it's literally about this. One of them just doesn't really, like, I'll be honest with you, it's probably yours for me, right? I think there's a lot of reward you get out of it because it's a lot more interesting. It's a lot more complicated between the range and the melee and the 7-7, you know, and getting your XP from burn cards and all that. I personally would find my brain would find that too stressful, and I probably wouldn't have a good time with it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. I'd say from a playstyle, from what I've seen, I never really liked the summoning classes in Gloomhaven. Mm. So I feel like from what I'm seeing Calvin do, there is a bit more depth to his character than the summoner characters in Gloomhaven. So I reckon that it will probably be a bit more entertaining. I just don't know how much depth there would be. Like it seems that it would get a little bit repetitive with I summon, I make them move forward and do a bunch of stuff. And that for me would end up kind of getting to the point where I don't know if I'd feel like you're not doing much. Most of the puzzle is making sure that you move your summons and time them right so that they go to the right places. It's like almost like trying to maximize their automatic movement. It is a lot. And I know through playing Gloomhaven, one of my friends played both the summoner and also the bear one. And a lot of that was looking at the board before you have your turn, going like, okay, well, this is going to go here and this is going to go here when I have my turn. So do I want to go late? Do I want to go early? How do I manipulate that? Which is its own puzzle in itself. But I just feel like that's probably something I probably would get a little bit tired of.
I wonder if we haven't gone through any of the other characters, right? I haven't gone through Phil's deck. I haven't gone through Calvin's deck. We don't know whether or not there are other options that they're just not choosing. And they're sticking to a similar... There could be a different way of playing it. Like, I may be just jumping the gun with saying, oh, maybe they're not that flexible and they're wearing one note. But we're not too sure, because I think every scenario almost is potentially a new trick coming out, right? And there could be more to it.
Definitely. I think there would be. I know I've seen a couple of Phil's cards and there's different ways that he can go about his shadow generation, and that would change his playstyle as well. And by no means do I think that the Bone Shaper looks boring or not very good, because I feel like if you're talking about contribution, Kelvin's consistently out of pumping out damage. Mm. You know, tanking, throwing out heals. Like, if anything, he's got a very flexible support character, which means that he can do lots of things. And then he pulled out that big attack five at the end, which basically, you know, guaranteed us the win. So it's got a lot of tricks. And I think maybe we just, it really does depend on the scenario.
Mm.
So, yeah, but it's an interesting idea. And I mean, like, I'd love to go have a look at the Blink Blade and the Banner Spear. Like, I think they both sound, and I haven't read anything about them, so just the names of them. And, like, so it's, I'd love to have a look at them, and I'm sure we'll see them eventually. And we, you know,
will
work
we?
Out. Well, you know, by like episode 50, we'll have finally gone through all the base classes, right?
Oh, who's, like you said, like in episode 2, who's going to pick that? Or was it episode 3? Who's going to pick one of the original starting ones? Or 100% picking Snowflake and Trapper and whatever else that's new that's coming?
That's what I mean, though. Huh. That's why it'll be episode 50, because we're going to keep opening these new ones and people will retire and they'll just take the new one.
You take Geminate 2.0.
Yeah, totally.
Just play the Geminate again.
That can be the challenge for Deddy. Play the Gemini.
yuck. Well, thank you all for joining us. We're probably going to wrap things up and look forward to some weekend fun. Yeah, we've been a master's degree in Rolling Terribly. Thank you.
And remember, when it comes to rolling terribly or falling over in the second room, it's all in the wrist.